Welcome to Sentence to Paragraph, a podcast on the space between wordcraft and the writer's life. Today our topic is the feedback cycle, edits and editors and writers. I am Molly Martin, and I'm joined today by my co-host, Darylyn Evans. Hi, Darylyn.
Hey, Molly. How's it going?
Good. kind of good. I was just talking, Darylyn and I were just talking before we started the podcast about our writery news. And I'm going to go ahead and tell mine first because I'm self-centered. And what could be more important than me? So my big news is that I had recently gotten back feedback from my editor. And as I'm diving into the feedback, I'm finding a lot of it is incredibly valuable, but it also feels like I'm just getting so much work. And so it's very interesting for me to look at it from the point of view of the writer who's getting feedback from the editor instead of the editor who's giving feedback to the writer. So that's part of my news. My other news is that I've submitted a short story to an anthology that's in Australia. So let's see how that goes.
So exciting.
Yeah.
Is that, how did that come about?
So I'm in a Facebook group for that just has like sci-fi and fantasy submissions, kind of open calls for submissions that roll through. And every once in a while I see one that either matches a story that I've already written or inspires me to write a short story. So the story that I'm submitting is basically, it's vampires and mercenaries and deployments in Iraq and lots of fun stuff like that.
How do you very cool. So exciting.
Yeah.
Yay.
Cool.
It's just a really good. Is that so me now? Do I get to go?
Yes, yes. So now that we've discussed me, we can move on to other people.
Okay. It's all about me now. these are always the hard things when you're just in the long, baggy middle of things. I don't feel like I have anything to report other than it is now the 30th of May as we record this, and I have officially written every day this year of 2019. So I feel excited about that because that's probably my longest ever running writing streak. And that feels good. I'm in the middle of a novella, and at first I was just using it as an exercise as a vehicle to do some writing exercises and kind of work on some craft things, but it became a novella. And so I've kind of been writing into the dark with it, but I realized that I'm feeling lost because I like to have a little bit more structure. And so I finally whiteboarded it the other night and got a better sense of some aspects of it and the themes and what it's really about. And so now I'm trying to apply that so I can get to the end a little bit faster. So it was a good exercise to try to paint something completely from scratch, as opposed to coming in pretty early with, like usually I'll get an idea and I'll write around it for a little while. And then once I have a sense of it, then I kind of whiteboard it out. I'll outline it and think about some of the bigger themes and whatnot and where it's going. But this time I was just noodling around and I finally got tired of that. So it was ready for some structure.
Yeah.
I don't know how pantsers do it completely pantsed. It's going to take me 400 years if I keep going in the direction I was going. So, And it was also going down a lot of side trails that, like, I don't know if this has anything to do with it. And it's not completely wasted time because it was an exercise in aspects of craft, but it isn't really ultimately going to make it to the story. But now that it wants to be a real story, then I needed a little structure. So that's where I'm at. But it kind of feels like that, you know, you talk to somebody after a really long time, and it's like, well, it's just the same old, same old. Just doing my little writing every day, and that's where the writing is. So,
yeah,
that's my.
Well, first of all, congratulations because you are almost half a year of complete writing every single day. So that is a big major thing.
Yeah, and I've got well, just on this thing, I've got 88,000 words on my little writing every day thing. So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
A lot of it is crap, but it's my crap and I wrote it. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. I think right now we're both in the process of doing things that are taking us out of our writing comfort zones, that you were pantsing for a while and now you're having to switch back and do some, or enjoying the switch back and doing some plotting.
Mm-hmm.
And I had, you know, pantsed my novel, and now I'm getting editor feedback and realizing that, oh, I do actually have to plot this thing out and try to make it all work and get this beast under some kind of control.
Yes. Mm. Well, does that transition us into talking about our topic for today? And we'll use you as our guinea pig to...
Oh, that sounds like fun.
Okay. So you just got a bunch of feedback on your novel. And what you were saying before we started is that it's a lot of, like, it was exciting and excellent feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it also feels like now you have this entire, like, you have to rewrite the whole thing, and there's a lot more work after you put a lot of work in.
Yes.
So we were, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, so to give you an idea, the novel as it stands currently in its previous unrevised or first draft version is 134,000 words, which is really... probably too much. That's probably like a novel and a half at least. So it's a lot, and it's kind of the sprawling odyssey of things that has multiple storylines and a timeline that doesn't quite add up and some mechanics that need fixed. So there's a lot of problematic stuff that I knew was problematic, but being a pantser, I can ignore that and just blithely continue to write. So that's what I did in the first draft. And now I'm going through kind of like this up and down cycle. Like at first I was, you know, very excited that I was done. And then I started looking my stuff over and realized, oh my God, this needs so much work and editing. And then I found an editor that I really liked. So then I was excited again. And then I sent it off to the editor. And then I was kind of depressed because I was like, oh, there's going to, you know, I have to wait to actually get the feedback, and I'm so eager to get back to work on it. And then I got the feedback, which, you know, so now I'm up again and I'm very excited and reading the feedback, and a lot of really good ideas and helped me fix some mechanics that I was worrying about, and fix some timeline issues and plot points and all. I mean, it's a lot of good stuff, but it's just now I'm coming down from that high of being really, really happy with all the feedback and looking at, I've got so much work to do. So it feels like I have to basically rewrite the whole novel. And I'm trying to keep under 100,000 words. Yeah.
And you can't just like cut out these 40 pages and you're done.
Not really. So one of the problems that the novel has, is that there's basically four different characters. And the way that it's structured right now, there's essentially four different plot lines, because each of the characters at the beginning of the book, they're kind of all together, but then they immediately spread out and go in different directions. And then they are separate for most of the book. And then three of them get together at the end, and then there's one still off, you know, doing their own thing by the end. But for most of the book, it's four different plot lines. And the editor's suggestion, which I think is pretty smart, is to get the characters together, and similar events can unfold, but the characters need to be together, which means all of those scenes need to be rewritten, because now instead of having one character there by themselves, there's going to be two or three others with them. Meanwhile, while I was in the interim between starting this and actually finishing it, I feel that I, as a writer, have learned a lot more about craft, and I'm just going to go ahead and steal Eric Witchie's discussion about premise and character arc, character motivation, and things like that. And those are things that I'm incorporating into the story, because one of the problems that the story has right now is there was no through line to the whole story. There's no kind of overarching theme of the story or question that the story is trying to address. It's just kind of this wandering, you know, like, hey, wouldn't this be cool? Wouldn't that be cool? And here's all the other cool things that could happen in the apocalypse. And there's a lot of really, really cool things that could happen in the apocalypse, but not all of them belong in this book. So trying to figure out which ones of those cool things both belong in the book and are thematic to the story that I'm, that, or the overall premise of the story, is something that the editor was very helpful in pointing out, of kind of like, hey, this is really cool, but this isn't part of this story. This is part of a different story. So it's a lot of work, but it's good work. And I think, what I'm realizing is that you plotters have an advantage, because you kind of sit down ahead of time and ask yourself these questions before you get to work. So, yeah, beginning to regret the error of my ways.
Oh no! Well, it as with everything, it's a character building experience, right? You learned a lot about craft and generating stories, so it's not lost, right?
And the other thing is, I was just going to say, in support of my fellow pansters, I think that had I just been told to sit down and plot this whole thing out, I would not have been able to come up with all of the material that I need that I can now revise. Like, I kind of have to, you know, I heard the analogy of just shovel sand into your sandbox and not worry about making a sandcastle in your first draft. And I think that's, you know, this is my first draft is just getting all together, all the sand. And now my second draft, this big revision, is trying to make it all pretty and make it all make sense.
Mm-hmm. When you sent it off, and I guess try to formulate that question a little differently. So how much work do you feel like you put into that first draft that you ended up sending to the editor? Like, is it truly a first draft, or did you do some polishing or those kinds of things, like feeling like, oh, it's pretty close to done? And I'm asking that harkening back to, like, you know, kind of, I guess our topic, we were thinking of, like, how do you pull yourself out of the doldrums?
Yeah, that's a good question. So what I had gone through is I'd completed a first draft, first draft. And then I was writing book three, and in the process of writing book three, I realized that there were things in book three that actually needed to be in book two. So then I went back to book two and kind of started tearing it apart and inserting things from book three back into book two and revising it. And then in the process of that revision, by the time that I was done with that, I got to the point where I'm like, I've spent too much time looking at this. I know that there are large parts of it that don't make sense. I know the timeline is screwed up. I know some of these storylines and plot lines connect in weird ways because some of them have been shoved in after the fact. And so because I hadn't written it all together kind of from beginning to end, when I sent it off to the editor, I already knew that there would be a lot of work involved. And so that's why, you know, you were mentioning pulling yourselves out of the doldrums, is I had done that in sending it to the editor, because for a while I just despaired of ever doing anything with the book. And I'm like, well, I'll just go write a bunch of other stuff instead of working on this because I can't figure it out. And so my solution to figuring it out was, I won't figure it out. I'll send it to somebody else and they can figure it out for me. So when in doubt, make somebody else do the work for you.
Perfect. But now you're facing that thing of, as you had said before we started, like, I put a lot of work into this, but now I have to basically rewrite it and put that work in again. And I think, you know, that happens a lot with writing, and, you know, we take something to a critique group or editor, or, you know, we've just been working on something forever and somebody reads it, gives that feedback of like, oh, that's actually what we were supposed to do. Now I understand it. Now that I put really into it. In a lot of ways, that's just part of the gig. When you're a writer, there's going to be a lot of rewriting and reworking and rethinking. Mm. And that whole thing about revision to see again is, you know, and then reworking things. But we don't realize that at the outset, I think. A lot of us sit down and go, oh, I'm just going to sit down and write my novel and then hit publish. And so how do you navigate that? And what are you doing? And like, yes, it's exciting to get the feedback, but then that realization, oh, that's a whole lot of work. And that can feel daunting and frustrating because it kind of feels, or I don't know about you. For me, it feels a little defeated. I feel defeated sometimes. It's like, oh, I just worked so hard and it wasn't
good enough.
So yeah. How do we navigate that?
So I'll put on my little psychologist cap here and say, like, first, it's okay to feel bad. Like, it's okay to feel your feelings. This is something I tell my kiddo all the time, is that it's okay to feel your feelings, even the bad feelings. She's going through a process right now where she's kind of coming to terms or coming to understand that when we move, she's not going to see the friends that she has here. And while she's excited about moving, she's also quite sad about leaving her friends. And so we were talking about, you know, it's okay to feel your bad feelings. So feel your bad feelings. And, you know, we live in this culture that kind of, you know, we have this constantly curated image that we show the rest of the world of, like, I'm always happy and I'm always successful and I'm always energetic and I'm always productive. And those are not realistic goals to aspire to. I mean, we can want to be those things some of the time, but some of the times we are not. So feel your feelings. But then when you're done feeling your feelings, and whether you're, you know, in a state like Oregon when you can medicate one way, or in a state like other states where you just have chocolate and beer to rely on, you know, do whatever you need to do. And then the theme of my book, I realized in working on this, because now I feel like I'm a grown-up person who uses themes in their books, is resilience. And there are some characters in the book who are resilient to change, and they can change and adapt. And there are other characters in the book who are brittle and who are very committed to kind of clinging to the world that was before and trying to preserve what came before and are not able to change. And how do those different characters navigate? And which is important, because some characters are giving up things that they need to preserve because they are so, you know, rushing to embrace the new, while other characters are clinging to things that are harmful to them and refusing to sort of face the facts of their new reality. So me as an author, I'm just thinking about my resilience and trying to be resilient in the face of, like, getting knocked down. And then the other thing that I think of is, like, when I started writing this, I was just writing it because it was fun to write. And to realize, like, it's actually fun to write too. Like, I think what's daunting is you look at it and you think, I have to write 100,000 words again. But you've written how many words? 88,000 words in 6 months. So, like, obviously it can be done. So kind of not looking at it as, like, I have to do this whole thing today. Like, you don't have to eat the whole elephant in one bite. You can just nibble away at the toes for a while. And then realize, like, you are a writer. You like writing. This is fun. This is what you do anyways. Or, you know, you're a hopeless addict and you can't help yourself and you're just going to write whether you like it or not.
It's probably the latter for many of us.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and I think that's where separating out your writing for the joy of writing, but also that artistic writing side of you and getting the book or whatever project you're working on, like getting that to into whatever shape, but knowing, you know, it takes a lot of work to sculpt that into shape. But separating it from the expectation of the publishing side and the product, you know, here's the perfect thing that you're going to take out and sell. And yes, ultimately we do want to, most of us, sell our work and whatnot. But I think not having that expectation or that pressure on it too soon to have to be this saleable thing that has to go out into the world tomorrow is important. I think that helps take the pressure off of that so that you can stay in that joy and writing part. Because I think as soon as it stops being fun, why are we doing this?
Yeah. Yeah, there are certainly easier and more lucrative ways to make a living than being a writer. So if you're not in some way enjoying it, even if it's a masochistic way, like, why do it?
It gets easier to shake those things off. I know those first few times in critique groups when you get that, like, you think you've presented something that they're all just going to go, oh, this is amazing, hit send and publish it tomorrow. And then when you actually go and they're like, no, actually all of these things aren't working, it can be really devastating and frustrating, but you do develop a thick skin over that over time. But that doesn't go away. I think one of the things that we think is, oh, I'm going to, you know, like once I've had all my writing classes and I've written a few things and I'm published, then I just know how to do this work and I can show up every day and just write something and send it out with, you know, or do my very basic revisions or whatever, because it'll come out so brilliantly the first time and then send it. That doesn't go away. Like then there's always like those deeper craft things and those more things. you're always going to be spending that time in, you know, reworking and rebuilding and whatnot. So like, that's just part of the deal, I guess. And understanding that early, I think is important too.
Yeah. Well, and this is why I think having a supportive writing community around you is so important, because writing is very isolating and it can be pretty depressing, especially when you feel like you've gotten knocked down. And honestly, like, if I saw, you know, I think every writer goes through this where periodically you look back at things you wrote 5 or 10 years ago and you're kind of horrified. And
burn that.
And somehow the people that you showed that writing to 5 or 10 years ago are still speaking to you. And and you're just amazed at how wonderful those people are, that you're like, oh yeah, here's my story that I wrote 15 years ago and it was so terrible, and not only did you read it, but you know are still my friend, so thank you for that. Yeah, but that's one of the things that I think having a writing community that can kind of meet you where you are in your writing journey and say, like, we don't expect the same level of expertise or the same level of resilience from a beginning writer as we expect from somebody who's you know, been to this rodeo a couple of times.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, what are some of your specific coping mechanisms that are appropriate and legal on the air? what are initial reactions, and then how have you, like, what was it 10 years ago, if you had received this, what would it have been, and now what is it? How do you work through it?
I always embrace my inner writing genius. No matter how terrible
your
my writing is.
Humility is amazing.
It is. It's not my best quality, but it's certainly a good one that I have. So, you know, whenever I write something, I am like completely convinced that it's the best thing that has ever been written. And then I get feedback on it. And I feel just so bad for those people who are giving me feedback that they are incapable of recognizing the amazing brilliance of my writing. And then after a day or two, I begin to feel silly. And thankfully, those people continue to give me valuable feedback no matter how many times I don't listen to them. So yeah, I think my main trick is, like, or my main secret is, find writers who will still love you despite yourself.
Yeah. We love you, Molly.
Yay, thank you. So one, you know, understand, like, even if nobody else likes your writing, you liked it. Like, it was fun for you. Like, you enjoyed the writing of it. And if you're in a group where you're just getting tons of bad feedback, that doesn't necessarily mean that everything about your writing is bad. It just can mean that you're in the wrong group. Because, you know, if you are writing romance and you're in a group that likes, you know, military, you know, Marines and space opera sci-fi, with lots of, you know, starship porn in it, that's probably like a Regency romance is not going to get a lot of good feedback in that group. So kind of take that into account too, is who are the writers that are with you and what are the things that they like? And then the other thing when you're getting feedback is this feedback tailored to you and where you are as a writer, or is it tailored from the point of view of the other writer? Because again, we're talking about like, we expect different things of writers at different levels. You know, we don't expect the same thing of novice writers as we expect from very experienced writers. And if you're a very experienced writer, it can be hard to bridge that gap and say, like, here are the things that the novice writer is doing good. Again, this is one of the things Eric Witchie was talking about, is that if you're a very experienced writer, you are actually not going to give as good advice to novice writers as a sort of a mid-experienced writer, like a not novice writer, but a not too experienced writer, because they can, there's the word. English is my first language. But those intermediate writers can still remember, like, here are the struggles that I had and here's how I overcame them. Whereas the experienced writers are going, I remember what it was like to go from intermediate to experienced, but, you know, it's further in their past of how did they, you know, stop doing these sort of basic beginner problems that writers have.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I think both of us have seen that when you hear a talk from an experienced writer, if they are not being terribly careful, they'll be saying, they'll be talking about their own writing experience or how they do it. And it's important as it is well, but it's really hard to know this as a beginning writer, like understand, even if they kind of remember it that way, they really weren't just writing, you know, amazingly beautifully, except for Molly, at the amazing genius level they're writing and with all of that craft knowledge they're writing at, so that they have these habits they've developed over time. Some of them may tell you, oh, this is, I've always sat down and write just like this, even from the beginning. And that's probably not true. They have forgotten some of those painful early learning moments. So also be careful with that advice they might be giving you. This took me a while to learn as a critiquer, coming back into groups that after having had a being out in the world and doing the MFA is coming back into a group and not like, not everybody is they're not all writing at, I want to be this amazing literate, like, that's coming out poorly. Let me rephrase. They are not necessarily writing to, the literary genre. So like really recognizing, okay, what genre are we dealing with? What are the actual, you know, what are the conventions and expectations of that genre? I think you said this a different way earlier, and making sure that giving feedback that's appropriate to that. Yeah. But also to people's, you know, we have been out in the world and learning for years and years, like understanding where folks are and trying to give the feedback that's right for them where they are. That's hard, but that's important to recognize. So.
Well, and this is one of those, one of the things that I've noticed, particularly since moving away from Eugene, is that the writing community in Eugene, at least my experience of it, was very generous and very giving and very supportive. And it helped me so much as a writer, you know, that I had these other writers around who everybody really wants each other to succeed, and everybody really wants to encourage each other, and everybody really wants the other writers to get better at craft. You know, there's a lot of generosity in that writing community, and I think that's one of the things that WordCrafters helps to promote and you know, kind of helping to meet writers where they are in their writing journey. And there are just sort of different levels of, like, this is the class for beginners, this is a class for more advanced writers, this is a class for intermediate writers. And so you can kind of play around and see where you're at. And I miss it a lot.
Oh, and we miss you. You're going to find a great community in your new space.
I probably will, but not the same.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I think as far as like coping with writing doldrums, you know, feel your feelings, get, you know, ask for, reach out for support and help. So here's another thing that I did after I got my edits and I was feeling pretty overwhelmed, is I just went and worked on a different project so then I could still have a sense of accomplishment. I'm like, okay, well, this is all crap, but this other thing that nobody has given me any feedback is still pristine and genius.
So. Yeah, perfect. That's a good way to think about it. My coping mechanism, I got kicked in the teeth yesterday about, not about a writing project, but about something, a project I've been working on at work. And that is a very long-term thing, and we have been talking about it for a couple of years, and we're working on it, and it's not going to be done for another year or so. And then just had this really super negative and unexpected feedback about it. Just the this is never going to work thing, which was kind of a surprise, but also, I don't know, it was pretty ouchy. You know, 10 years ago, if I'd had that feedback, I probably would have quit and run off to join the circus. But fortunately, because of having been in writing for so long, lots of writing groups, I have to go to ground a little bit. And usually that's like, go watch a movie or go do something that like puts me out, like totally gets me out of the, thinking about obsessively about whatever the negative feedback is, and then try to do something creative, but maybe not writing related or whatever related to whatever it is that you're working on, and have some chocolate and talk to the people and get the support. And like today I woke up and it's like, okay, fine, I'll show them. But that probably would have taken a lot longer, like binge watching an entire movie series or something a few years ago. But now it's a little faster process. And it does get better. It gets easier to weather those storms. So know that it takes a little bit, but it gets easier and easier to weather that. So, and then get right back on that saddle.
And also understand that it is a way easier to critique other people who are down in the trenches and working really hard about all the ways that they are not being perfect. It's really easy to do that when you're not down in the trenches and not working hard. Mm-hmm. So not saying they're wrong, but they clearly are.
Clearly. Yeah. Now, what do you do, like, so just interestingly, like, what do you do if you were to get a thing that said, yeah, this is not, that this would need so much work, it's not redeemable, or it's not fixable in this form?
Yeah.
Like, so, how do you know when to call it, I guess?
Maybe yeah.
A whole different episode.
Yeah, I think some of that depends on how much, like, my own sense is that it's not working. Like, so when I sent my story to the editor to have him look over it, I also sent along, like, here's a list of things that I want you to answer for me. So, you know, I knew that there were timeline problems. I knew that there were plotline problems. I knew that there was a problem with the mechanic in the story. And I had just gotten to the point where I'm like, I can't solve any of these problems. I've been flailing around in the story for so long. I'm just like, I'm making it worse. So when I got feedback and he said, like, you know, this isn't working, the timeline isn't working, the plot lines, you know, those aren't working. Those are things that I already knew weren't working. Now he did have a suggestion about changing one of the main threats in book two, and it's kind of the reverse of what I have expected. So I have, you know, my main threats in book two are, you know, this faction, and this faction. And I have a rising threat, a decreasing threat, and a threat that's going to carry through. So the way that that's working in book two is there is a threat that's going to carry through from book two to book three. There's a threat in book two that is a decreasing threat that will become less of a threat as the book goes along and go away by book three. And there's a threat in book two that's being introduced that will then become the main threat in book three. And his interpretation of the way that book two was working, he kind of had reversed two of those. And he said, you know, so this, you know, you need to resolve the threat with this group so that in book three you can start over again and they are not going to be the big bad, but they're actually the big bad in book three. And so in those instances, I trust my judgment because I know what's going to happen in book three. And I know that they're going to be the big bad in book three. So while I respect all the work that my editor did and helping with the areas that I had asked about, when I disagree with the editor, especially on like fundamental things in the story, I'm going to trust my judgment too. I think where I'm more likely to throw something away or say like, you know, I've been working on this forever and it's never going to get fixed is like, honestly, when I get bored with it, which happens pretty frequently at like as a panster, I kind of like, you know, I have my little baby stories and then abandon them once they've been delivered. I'm like, oh, here you go. Okay, you're out in the world. I'm done with you and I'm off. And so once a story is done, I don't tend to work on it very often and I'm less kind of committed to it. Like if I'm working on a story and somebody tells me it's not working, I'm like, oh, but it's not finished yet and it's all going to work out magically in the end. Ha ha, because I'm a genius. Rarely happens. But once I'm done with it, then I'm like, you know, it didn't all work out in the end, but I'm done with it and I have a more interesting story someplace else. So one of my coping mechanisms is, I guess, distraction as a writer. Like I'm not super, super committed to the one story. I can go off and write a short story or I can work on a different novel or something like that. And this is a super awesome coping mechanism that as an editor, whenever I'm really frustrated because I can't fix my story, then other people will pay me money to fix their story. And I'm way better at fixing other people's stories.
Do you find that helps you get back into yours or to solve a problem for you? Or at least take you out of thinking about it a particular way so that after you've looked at something else, you can come back in with fresh eyes and go, oh, okay, maybe this.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does. And then the other thing that I find helps a lot is just, you know, sort of blatant and wholesale stealing things from other people. So when I see somebody who's doing a romance in a story and, you know, they have some twists and turns and, you know, great heart-pounding scenes of high emotion and things like that, I'm like, okay, how did they do that? You know, what were the techniques that they used? And so part of my job as an editor is to point out for writers, like, when what they're doing is working. And I think when we get a lot of feedback, it's way easier to focus on the negative and say, like, this isn't working. Mm-hmm. But it's harder to say what is working and why. But if you can say what is working and why, then you are understanding the techniques that the author is using either consciously or subconsciously, because a lot of techniques I think that writers use, we've just absorbed subconsciously because we're huge readers, so we just pick these things up anyways. But forcing yourself to stop and sort of describe out, like, this is really working because my expectation was this, but then this happened, but you foreshadowed it in the previous chapter, so it really felt like there was a good payoff. And now I'm anticipating that this other thing will happen in the story. So you've got me hooked and I want to read the next chapter. Like, when you can talk about that with the writer and sort of go through step by step all of these little things, then that helps you as a writer also, because then you're like, oh, when I want to set up something in my story and I want the reader to anticipate things in my story, how did that work in the other story and how can I use that technique in my story?
That sounds like a perfect editing tip for this week, too.
Yes. So I guess my editing tip is just steal shamelessly from other people who are doing it well.
Mm-hmm. Steal the craft, not the actual prose.
Yes. No, yes. Don't steal the prose. Don't do that. Don't be one of those people.
Perfect.
Oh. Harry Potter and the Stolen Prose.
Mm-hmm. Oh. Well, it's so fun talking to you. Do we have anything else? What are you off to this week for writing?
So you will be pleased to know that I am using a story structure, Thera Lynn's famous cards that she's developed. And if you can get her to give them to you or sell them to you or anything like that, they're magical. Mm-hmm. It's like having a gift from your fairy godmother, your writing fairy godmother. Oh. I'm using that structure to take the advice that my editor has given me and then replot out and outline my book too, so that I can look at it and see, okay, what parts can I keep? What parts do I need to fix? And what parts do I need to get rid of entirely?
Very exciting.
Aww. Yay.
Cool. I am going to, I actually have the weekend off. I'm so excited. I have 3 days off. And as far as I know, I have zero family obligations. So I'm going to spend the weekend writing. I'm so excited. And doing some yard work because that's getting fatal. But other than that, the honeysuckle is taking over the house.
Yeah, there are worse things.
Yeah. Yes, I get this weekend and next weekend, and then it's back into the trenches for 3-week-long work weeks. So.
That'll be fun.
Eric Witchie's Fiction Fluency. It will not suck that much. The hard work I do. So, okay. Well, it was super fun talking to you. I hope you have a wonderful
day. You too.
And we will chat soon.
Yep. Bye, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.